Mizdos Avramla, the Netziv, starts off the parsha and says that Bnei Yisrael had already received brachos from Yaakov, you know, and from Bilhah. They got brachos in Parshas Vayechid, they got brachos in Parshas Balak, right? But this bracha was much greater than anything that they had given them. The pasuk calls it Vizos HaBracha. This is the real bracha that's given by the Ish HaElokim, the man of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Shekhinah spoke through Moshe Rabbeinu's throat. Everything he said was straight from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't as great as he was at the end of his life, and that he started losing a little bit of his greatness. He was no longer on that level at the very end of his life. But the last day that he was living, on the day that he died, when he gave this bracha, everyone agrees, with Nei Moso, he was able to pull it together and he made himself greater than he ever was, twice as great as he ever was. We see this concept from Elisha and Eliyahu HaNavi, as we mentioned before, that Elisha HaNavi went up to Eliyahu HaNavi and said, on the last day of Eliyahu HaNavi's life, right before he was brought to Shemayim in a fiery chariot, he said to him, I want to be twice as great as you. How can you give twice as great as yourself? You can't do that. But on the last day of your life, you can become that powerful. The last day of your life, you are doubly as great as you were beforehand.
Last day of your life, that's an issue. At your death, like at the moment of your
life. It doesn't say. It says the last day. Biyom Moso is what they all darshan it out from. So it seems to be the day of your life. But you're probably right that it's close to your death as opposed to him. We brought another raya from Yaakov Avinu and from Esav. That Yaakov, in the last day of his life, was together with Avram Avinu. That he saw Avram Avinu die and was around Avram Avinu right before he died. While Esav, who is he with right before somebody died, on that very same day? Nimrod. And therefore he took from Nimrod all of that tumah, the great tumah that was there. So that's the idea behind it, that the neshama of a tzaddik becomes greater than ever. And therefore this bracha was the greatest bracha that has ever and will ever be given to Klal Yisrael. There is no other bracha greater than this. There's other ways of getting close to tzaddik. Anyway, that's number one. That's how great this thing is. Now, the Ramchal puts something very, very simple. Puts something simple together, and he understands that in the Sefer Mesilas Yesharim how Derech HaChassidus works, and he goes through a whole process of getting through Zehirus and Zrizus, etc., Nikius, Precious, etc., bringing yourself to the level of where you get to Chassidus. And Chassidus is a very, very high level. The Netziv argues with Ramchal. He says, that's a form of Chassidus, but that's not what Chassidus is. Simple Chassidus, to be a Chassid, means to go beyond the ordinary. If you go beyond your nature, something beyond your base nature, and you try doing that, then you are considered a Chassid. That's considered perfection and perfecting yourself. If you can figure out some way of going beyond what would be normal for you, above your nature, that's the type of idea behind it. And one of the ways, says Anitziv, to have that happen for you is, if terrible things happen to you, but if terrible, terrible things happen to you and you can't figure out why, you're sitting there and you're looking at it and you're like, I just can't figure out why in the world this happened to me. You accept it and you say to yourself, I'm going to accept it, I'm going to live with that, I'm going to say, okay, I don't understand it, but I'm going to go with it. That automatically makes you a chassid. Two times, yes.
Do you ever understand why something bad happens to you, or fully explain it?
You can always guess. You're never going to be right. The one time where it mentions something in the Torah regarding a chassid is, it's funny. It says it by Levi. It says, "Ulevi amar tumecha v'urecha liish chassidecha." Now, the pashuk shati on the pasuk is your urim v'tumim, the tumecha v'urecha, the urim v'tumim which is held in the Kohen Gadol's breastplate, is liish chassidecha, to the man of your chassid. Because Aaron HaKohen was known as a man of chesed, and he's chesed because he kept going around to all of Klal Yisrael. That's the simple pshat in the pasuk. But the word literally is l'ish chassidecha. What made Aaron HaKohen a chassid? Maybe he was always kind. Maybe he was just a good guy from birth. And a guy like that, for him to go around and make people, you know, love each other, whatever it is, I mean, that's not that big of a deal. I would expect that out of somebody who was born that way. So what's the big deal? What made Aaron special, that he was greater than anybody else to the point that he was a chassid?
Avram was the one that said,
he's for sure, yeah, he's the prototype, the Av of Chesed, so to speak.
No, but that's Av and Shalom, like he brought peace, he's a peacemaker.
You are 100% right, but through that he was able to do Gemilah. There is no way to get to Shalom without getting to Gemilah.
Obviously through the Midah of Chesed, but I'm saying, but Shalom in itself was like, I thought the whole concept of Avram was the man of Chesed, but he did too.
There's no question, however, that a Kohen still has the concept of Chesed, and that Aaron HaKohen must have excelled at it in the way and everything he did. So whether or not he's the prototype or he's the exact definition thereof, regardless, if you would have seen this word Ish Chassidecha, you might translate it as Chassid. Because you'll just say, okay, he's a man of Chassid. That's all it is. Where's the Chassidus of Aaron HaKohen? Where's the Chassidus? What makes him into a Chassid? There were two times where something happened to Aaron that he could not understand in his lifetime. Could not understand, and nothing happened to him. Number one is, it says in the Pasuk, Asher Nesiso B'Masa. You tested him in Masa. Now, Rashi understands this as being the place, Masa, Maso Meriva, okay, the actual place of Masa. And for the Netziv understands something, and he says the following. If it was a place, now Masa is a question, what exactly happened? Possibly it's a reference to the Egel Azov. Possibly it's a reference to the Meraglim. The way that Rashi puts it, I'll just read up Rashi for you, he says, he did not complain in Shalom Alinu with all the others that complained in Maso. So that's Maso Meriva, the different places where Bnei Yisrael complained. Regardless, that's one thing, and it's an actual place. The Tziv says, if it was a place, now I don't know Dikduk, okay, but he does, and he says, it should have said the word Asher Nesiso B'Maso. It should have been a Patach instead of a Shva. B'Maso seems like it's a definition. It's a something reference to something. Now, what is the word Maso? What can that mean? It can mean to erase something or to melt something down. And here's how he understood it. He had two children that passed away in the height of their lifetime on the most special day of Aaron HaKohen's life. The day that he became the Kohen Gadol, which was Rosh Chodesh Rosh Chodesh Nisan of the second year, after they left Mitzrayim, his sons, who were perfect in every which way, they were the greatest men in Klal Yisrael, according to Moshe Rabbeinu, Nadav and Avihu, they went in and they brought a Ketoros that they shouldn't have brought, and they were killed on that day. It wasn't left until later on day. On that day, they were killed, and by Yidom Aaron. Aaron was absolutely silent. Now, if they would have only had children before they would have gone out, it wouldn't have been as that big of a problem. Because granted, okay, obviously it's a tragedy that they both passed away at such a young age and when they were so great, etc.
Nobody names their kids Nadav and Avihu.
It's one of the reasons. Nadav, you can hear.
I never heard anybody call Avihu.
Yeah, it's also a strange name.
But Nadav also, not very many people are named.
There's a favorite Tami Minhagen that's down on the side. This is nothing to do with anything, but on the side, Nadav and Avihu were both named for Aaron's father and his father-in-law. Avihu, after his own father, Amram, and Nadav, as in his father-in-law, Aminadav. Nachshon ben Aminadav was the brother of Elishava, who is the wife of Aaron, so he's named him Nadav after his father-in-law. And one of the reasons there's a Tami Minhagen why they have to die even from birth is because he named after his father-in-law before he named after his father. And the halacha is that you should go with your father after your father. I don't know if that's the actual halacha that's brought down, but the Tami Hagen brings that down, that Nadav was before Avihu, and that was one of the reasons why it was so bad. Regardless, but it could be that's the reason why they're not named after that as well. He was silent even though there was nothing. Here, nothing was left of them. You're not going to remember Nadav or Avihu ever, because there's no children that came from them, and Aaron just had them and they were lost. It was as if they melted away. And that's what it refers to, Bimah. So you tested him with melting away his children to the point where he had nothing left of them. Nothing left of those two children. Nothing was there. And yet, Aaron was 100% silent. That's one sign of a chassid. He was able to take something and say, okay, I'm gonna grow from this. I'm going to do something else instead. And number two, and possibly the hardest one, Tirivehu, you fought with him al Mei Meriva, regarding Mei Meriva. Mei Meriva is the place where, as we all know, the waters where Miriam passed away, right? And Moshe and Aaron were there to be able to talk to the rock. They debarked him of a cella, and if you speak to the rock, then the rock will give forth its waters, right? The problem was, Moshe Rabbeinu, instead of talking to the rock, got angry, hit the rock, and the water came flowing forward. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, because you did that, you and Aaron aren't going into Eretz Yisrael. What did Aaron have to do with anything? Now, granted, Aaron was commanded by Moshe Rabbeinu, or by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be there, but what was he going to do? Moshe got angry. Moshe's the one who did everything. Right? And yeah, he's the one with the stick. What did Aaron do wrong? Aaron had the greatest time in the world. You're killing me by association? By association with Moshe Rabbeinu? I've never argued with Moshe Rabbeinu before. I've never gone up against the leader of Klal Yisrael. You're telling me that I should have argued I'm the leader of Klal Yisrael and I should have said something? How do you expect me to do that? That's against my better nature. That's what Aaron could have argued and could have said, but he never said anything. He never argued about the fact. Moshe Rabbeinu davened 515 tefillos and parshas Vatzkana to get into Eretz Yisrael, but Aaron, he just dies. He just dies. Nothing. He goes up to the top of the mountain. He gives his clothing over to his son, Eliezer. Eliezer becomes the coin devil, and he dies. Not one complaint, even though he didn't do anything. He literally didn't do anything wrong.
Maybe he should have told Moshe not to hit the rock.
And to that, you're right. And that is, seems to be the problem. But in that, so Aaron has a claim back. He can't have a claim back and say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like, what did you expect? You really expect me to argue with Moshe Rabbeinu? Now, granted, the sign of a truly great person is when you go against your nature and you do what's right. Like Avraham went against his chesed and sacrificed his child, or was willing to sacrifice his child.
It's still a pillow of the whole thing that Moshe Rabbeinu, let's say, made a mistake, but still argued for tshuva. Aaron just kind of accepts this.
And Aaron was never even told what to do. He wasn't told to argue with Moshe Rabbeinu. He was told to just be there. Well, who said that I should argue if something ever happens? And yet, he said nothing. That shows chassidus. That is the definition of chassidus. Accepting God's decree, whatever it is. Even though he had a bitter complaint, he went way beyond his natural tendency, which was to argue. Now, let's try to understand something as a side point. Why did Aaron get punished for it? Now, we gave a couple answers back in Parshas Chukas. We gave it last year, not this past year, but last year. But from our standpoint, you're right. But there was one time when Moshe Rabbeinu did, when Aaron did argue with Moshe Rabbeinu. Normally, Aaron never said a thing to Moshe. There was one time. After Nadav and Abihu died, there was a Seir Rosh Chodesh that was brought on that day. A Seir, a goat, that was given as a Musaf for Rosh Chodesh and Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And it wasn't eaten by the Bnei Aaron and Aaron. It wasn't eaten by them. Instead, it was burned as an Ola. Now, that's not the Halacha by this Seir Rosh Chodesh. That Seir Rosh Chodesh was supposed to be eaten. And yet, it wasn't eaten by the Kohanim on that day. And to that, Moshe Rabbeinu, Darosh Darash Moshe, Moshe went into it and said, Bnei Sarap, it was burned. And he said, what did you guys do? Why did you do this? On that point, Aaron got up because he wanted to save his other two sons, who Moshe Rabbeinu was angry at them for burning it, and said, I'm an Onan. They're Onanim. Are we supposed to eat it on this day? Is an Onan supposed to eat it? Considering we became Kohanim Gedolim on this day, is that supposed to happen? Moshe Rabbeinu realized that Aaron HaKohen was right, and he accepted the Musa. And now we can understand the fact that he didn't complain to HaKadosh Baruch Hu by Nadav and Abihu, and yet he did argue with Moshe Rabbeinu, shows that he had a chance to argue with Moshe Rabbeinu by Meimariva, and he chose not to. That already could be an answer.
Did he know better, or was he part of that?
He must. I mean, we have to understand that you only get punished for things that you knew about. On our standpoint, we have no idea. But from his standpoint, yes, he should.
Argue Moshe Rabbeinu after the deed was done.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
you're correct.
With the rock and the stick, the Meimariva, you're asking right to argue before.
You are correct. You're correct. And it was a little bit different. And yet, if his argument was, I've never argued with Moshe Rabbeinu, then the argument back from HaKadosh Baruch Hu was, you did once. And therefore, you should have realized. Who knows? Maybe that's bad.
But the Moshe Rabbeinu asked him, what did you do? And he said,
this is what I did. Wasn't really an argument. He's right. It was an answer.
From the wording in the pasuk, you're 100% correct. According to the Gemara, it was machlokas. They did argue. Moshe Rabbeinu said, Onanim still have to eat, and Aaron darshaned from a kal v'chomer that they don't. So it was an argument. There was machlokas between it, and Moshe Rabbeinu was maskim to Aaron's svar. It was the only time that Moshe Rabbeinu went against his own svar, and the Gemara says because he got angry, therefore he forgot it. He forgot something. That's what ended up happening. So I hear that in the way, but it's not from that thing itself. Now, but there's another. There's a Chassam Sofer that I found this year. It's amazing. The Chassam Sofer will write these things for you in the most random places. He says over this answer for Aaron, and says the most unbelievable thing. He says both of them had to be involved in the deed at Meimariva. Just like the Shlichus in Mitzrayim. Everybody remembers in Mitzrayim, right? Who is the one who hit the river, the Nile River, in order to make it turn into blood? Aaron HaKohen. Who's the one that threw down the staff in order to turn into a snake? Aaron HaKohen. Who's the one who hit the water again in order to bring the Tzadeh? It was Aaron HaKohen. And Kenan is... Aaron HaKohen was involved. He was a shliach of Moshe Rabbeinu. So what maybe should have been done over here, since HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, "Vidibar Tzavon Lo Tzadi," you're supposed to speak to the rock, and yet he also told Moshe Rabbeinu to pick up the staff, kachas amaseh, to take the staff with you. Maybe Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to speak to the rock, and Aaron was supposed to hit the rock. That's what it was supposed to be. It was supposed to be a double combination of them two together. Now, we all know that Moshe Rabbeinu got angry. And he should have at Bnei Yisrael, because Bnei Yisrael were acting like little babies, and Moshe Rabbeinu should have got angry at Klal Yisrael. But we also know that the Shekhinah cannot appear when somebody gets angry. If somebody gets angry, there's no way for the Shekhinah to appear. There's no way for a person to get Nibu. In order to get Nibu, you have to be perfect. You have to be coming from a place of calmness, of surety, everything like that. There's no way to get Nibu in any other way. So when Moshe Rabbeinu got angry, there was no way for the water to come, because the Shekhinah couldn't come down to Bnei Yisrael, so there never should have been water from Mei Meriba. So how did the water come out when he hit the rock? How did that happen? The answer is, Aaron allowed the water to come out through his own kavanos. Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to bring out the water from the rock by speaking to it. And then when he saw it didn't happen, he picked up the staff in order to hit it. And Aaron put in his head, if he hits the rock, let the water come out. And he davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he let the water come out from the rock so that Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't be embarrassed when he hit the rock. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened. And that's why it came out weaker. Remember, the water came out as little trickles, and then he hit it again, and that's when it started flowing out. Because the pshat is that Aaron was allowing it to happen. Had it come out from Aaron and Moshe, it wouldn't have been a trickle, it would have been a downpour, it would have been a huge amount of water coming from the rock. But because Aaron is putting his kavanos in and Moshe Rabbeinu didn't, therefore it came out a little bit less, it didn't flow smoothly. And that's it, and it was all because Aaron didn't want Moshe Rabbeinu to be embarrassed. That caused a massive Chilul Hashem. How did it cause a Chilul Hashem? The people looked at it, and they said, how in the world is the water coming out? Moshe Rabbeinu is angry. The Shekhinah can't appear when he gets angry. So how did the water come out? Must be Moshe Rabbeinu used magic. Moshe Rabbeinu used some type of Tzad HaTuma, Sitra D'Achra, that was on some other side, and he brought out the water out from there, and that's what ended up happening. And the people started looking at it, and they were like, well, it couldn't be through the Shekhinah, because the Shekhinah wouldn't be here. Because of Aaron, there was a massive Chilul Hashem, and they were Mo'al, they were over on Me'ila. That's what it means by Yim Obi, that they were over on Me'ila by me, that they used my name, so to speak. Aaron used my name in order to create and cause a massive Chilul Hashem. That's why Aaron died. That's the chesam sofer.
But all for the sake to save somebody's, so somebody shouldn't be embarrassed.
Somebody shouldn't be embarrassed. 100%. And yes.
How does that work that way?
HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, listen, it's still in the Ela. And if it causes that big of a Chilul Hashem, granted you didn't embarrass Moshe Rabbeinu, but still, that's my cheshbon. That's what I have to deal with. And that was the problem. You should have said something straight out. This is not happening. They should have said something. But everybody knows that if Ava would have only said to other Marishon, by the way, this is from that tree. if other Marishon would have just said, like, God, should I eat this? He had good conversations with God if he just would have said, if you say something, it's different. And Aaron didn't. He got up and he said, I just want you to know this is coming from the Koach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Use Hashem of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and allow it to come out. He didn't. And that's where it came out. That is an unbelievable Chesam Sofer. An unbelievable. By the way, you know what shame he used to bring out? The Chesam Sofer says it elsewhere. It's Shimu Noha Morim. Morim, right, is the word. Listen, please, O rebellious ones, is what Moshe Rabbeinu said. The word to bring water from the ground is Miriam. Moshe Rabbeinu meant to say the word Miriam, which is the shame of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to bring water forth. And he didn't. He ended up saying Morim, which is three letters, Mem, Resh, Yud, Mem. And when he said it, messing up the trup that's there. I don't remember it exactly, but Morim is... there's one dot on top and one dot on the bottom, right? That's it. You just have a dot on top and a dot on the bottom for the Nekudos. Each dot stands for 10. So it's 10 and 10, that's 20 altogether. Miryam, okay? 10, 20, 30 for the Shva. The Chirik and the Shva is 30 altogether. Yom is a Vav and a Yud. That's what a Kamatz is made out of, a Vav and a Yud. Okay, so that's another 10, so that's 40, and then Vav is 6, so that's 46. 46 minus 20 is what? Yud-Kei-Vav-Ke. And the word Mol in the shame Yud-Kei-Vav-Ke. By saying the word Morim instead of Miriam, that's another Chesam Sofer. Chesam Sofer has everything. You just gotta find it. If you find it, it is the most unbelievable thing in the world, but that was the shame that Aaron HaKohen would use. Okay. At the very end of the parsha, Moshe Rabbeinu was buried, and it doesn't say where he was ever buried. It says Vayamashal Moshe, but it says in Pasuk Vav, Vayikbor Oso Bagai Be'eretz Moav. They buried him in a valley, Be'eretz Moav. I shouldn't say a valley; it's some type of mountain side, and the land of Moav, Mul Beis Por, opposite where the Peor idol was. Ve'lo Yadish Is Kvoros Ad Yom Hazeh, and no one knew where he was buried until today. How is that? You just gave me three descriptions of where he was. On the side of a mountain in the land of Moab, opposite Beis Peor. How hard could that possibly be? Keep going on. So granted, the Gemara in Soto with the Chachamim went after him, and they were up and they saw the Kavura is down. They went down and they saw the Kavura was up and they couldn't find it. Okay, so granted, that's right there. But that in and of itself takes a lot of work. What does that mean? What?
Where is that Gemara?
Soto Yud Gimel, I think. I think it's Soto Yud Gimel. But I, granted, that's out there, but how can it be that no one knows where he is? What kind of a lesson are we learning from that? What does that teach us? As people, we're trying to know. Nobody knows where he's buried. So I can't daven to him. I can't have him help by bringing my tefillos up to Shemayim like I would by any other tzaddik. You go to a tzaddik's kavura, obviously. We don't daven to Moshe Rabbeinu. But you daven for the tzaddik to bring your tefillos in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I can't do that as well, says the Gan Rava. This is a great little point. Normal people aren't allowed to know where they're going to be buried. Why? Or where they're going to die. I'm sorry. Normal people aren't allowed to know where they're going to die. Because if you knew where you were going to die, you wouldn't go then. Right, you wouldn't go. Right? But Moshe Rabbeinu knew exactly where he was going to die because he wrote this down. Knew exactly where he was going to die, knew exactly what he was going to do, and yet went. That's the idea of how great of a person Moshe Rabbeinu was. That's the idea behind it.
I don't know that too.
Aaron must have. He must have, because he said, you're going up to this mountain right now, and we're bringing out Lazar with you to bring his clothing. And so it must have been. That's in and of itself. Tzadikim want a makom kavura. That is, number one, owned by themselves. They have to own it themselves. Number two, contains a schus, like in Eretz Yisrael, or next to other gedolim. They want a makom kavura that's by somebody else. And number three, is situated somewhere near either his forefathers or his rebbeim. He wants all three. Any one of great tzadikim, they want one of those three things. They want to own it, they want it to have a schus, and they want to be by the rebbeim or by their father, somebody like that. It seems that Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't zocher to any of that. He wasn't buried by his forefathers, right? It wasn't in Eretz Yisrael. It wasn't in a special place. It was opposite Beis Peor. It was opposite in Avodah Zarah. And it wasn't owned by him. He didn't own the land.
Sorry, it's a remedial question, but where did the Shvatim go? Like, where were they buried?
Each one was buried in a different place. And mentioned it. Yeah, each one is a different place.
Yosef is
in Shechem. Yosef is in Shechem. No, they're all in Eretz Yisrael.
So where's Lady?
I don't remember. I'd have to check it up. It's all there.
They're all in Eretz Yisrael.
In the back of my big art scroll, Yishe HaTanach, I have all how long the Shvatim lived and where they were buried.
And where's Moshe's
all over there? Amram. Must have been buried in, I don't know, must have been in Mitzrayim, because it wouldn't have been.
So big Gadol, like Amram was a pretty big Gadol.
Tremendous, he never sinned.
So I'm saying, so he wasn't sent back there to Israel?
Not sent back.
Bones are in Mitzrayim?
I would assume it's in Mitzrayim, right next to Yaakov Ubuchatzer, right around there. It seems that Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't zocher to any of these three things, but in truth, this shows his greatness more than anything else. We all know who buried Moshe Rabbeinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu buried Moshe Rabbeinu himself. I mean, that's not common. It doesn't happen very often that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets involved himself. That means the area itself must have been special, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't go anywhere. He only comes down to Har Sinai and the base of Mikdash. There's no other place in the world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has ever allowed himself to be near. So if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is burying Moshe Rabbeinu on top of the mountain, that must mean that mountain is extremely special. And we know this. The Me'ara that Moshe Rabbeinu was buried is one of the 10 things, or the 16 things, that were made Erev Shabbos Ben HaShmashos. Anybody who does Pirkei Avos Parakei, or if you've done the Gemara Pesachim, you know that this place was made all the way. Erev Shabbos Ben HaShmashos was when the Me'ara of Moshe Rabbeinu was created. Now why? That means that it wasn't owned by anyone else. So it was already special. It wasn't owned by the Moavim. It was never used by the Moavim. It was created by a Kadosh Baruch Hu himself so that he himself can come down on top of it. And although the area had no inherent Kedusha, in fact, there was inherent Tumah, because Baal Peor was exactly opposite it, there was a Kedusha that was owned by them being opposite Baal Peor. By doing so, he was able to knock down the problems that Klal Yisrael had when Baal Peor would come up and try to do something bad to Klal Yisrael. There was something that happened, the Gemara in Sota, Tosos, and Chaf Aleph mentions that Baal Peor always wanted to come in and destroy Klal Yisrael, give some type of an excuse to whatever it was, and Moshe Rabbeinu was able to knock it down, and Baal Peor cannot go up to Shemayim to see his Mezakeh the Rabbin. See, even though it didn't have any inherent Kedusha, Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to be there in order to save the rest of Klal Yisrael. And since he was so different during his lifetime from everyone else that lived, so too when he died, he had to be different from everyone else. He was not allowed to be seen by anyone else when he died, and he was not allowed to be buried near anyone else. Look at Rashi and Pasuk Zayin over here. Rashi and Pasuk Zayin says, Lo chasa eino, his eye did not dim, af mishames, even when he died. It's an unbelievable pasuk. Even when he died. Says the Netziv, it does not mean that he could still see things after he had died. That means he's not dead. If he's still seeing things. So what does it mean, Mokosa Enov Lanas Leicho, that he still had wetness in him, that he still had his faculties around? It was like this, isn't it, Tiff? He wasn't really alive. But if you looked at him, he doesn't look dead. I mean, you can tell when a person is alive by his eyes. You can look in the eyes and you can see if the eyes are alive or if they're dead. Now, granted, there are sometimes you can look in people's eyes and you think they're dead. But usually, 99% of the time, you look at a person's eyes, you can tell. And if you look at his, I've never seen a person who's been dead, their actual eyes, but I would assume that a person's eyes, after they die, do not have that life in them. And you can tell. Those eyes are glassy. Those eyes are completely glassed over. There's nothing there. There's nothing to talk about. Moshe Rabbeinu, even after he died, it looked like he was looking right back at you. He looked like he was staring back at you. And his faculties were as if they were working. They weren't. There was no heart pumping blood. The brain was brain dead. Everything in his body was stopped, had stopped working. But it looked like it had just stopped working a second ago. That's what it looked like. He said his hair was still not growing, but his hair was still perfectly in place. His arms, his body, everything about him looked perfect. And that's what it means. Even when he died, his eyes looked like he was still alive, and his body looked like he was still alive, but he was not.
Don't they say that about the tzaddik doesn't, his body
does not rot,
does not decompose? I would assume Kal Vachomer that Moshe Rabbeinu would be on like
the high. I would assume, yes, and that's what it means. That's where we're getting it from. Everything that we know is from the Torah somewhere. Here's where it comes from.
The vessel is so Kodesh that it's like...
That. And I still think that means he's separated from everyone else in death. By everyone else, I'm sure the eyes still look dead. Even if the person looks whole and he has a whole body, the eyes must still look dead, even by the greatest tzaddikim. By Moshe Rabbeinu, he didn't look that way. He looked like he was alive. And that's the difference. We're never going to see it. I mean, no one will ever see it. No one can ever see it. Says Yaros Tavash. Because his body was so holy, this is Yaros Tavash is out of this world, literally. This Yaros of Rabbi Yonos and Eichitz. Since his body was so holy, he couldn't be in a physical burial place. He couldn't be. It was impossible. He was put, says the Yaros Tavash, I don't quite get it, in a fifth dimension. A fifth Gashmi, so to speak. And that's why no one can ever find his Kavura. Because the Kavura itself was created on Erev Shabbos Ben Hashmashos the same way that demons were made. And just like demons are impossible to be seen by the naked eye unless they want to be seen, so too the Makom Kavura of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's impossible to see it unless it wants you to see it, and it doesn't. So therefore, it's not in this plane, P-L-A-N-E. It's not in this area for anybody to be able to see. That's the idea behind it, and that's what made Moshe Rabbeinu so special. He was beyond any of the malachim. He was greater than any of the malachim. That's why no malachim could be involved. And if any of the malachim were there, none of them could bury Moshe Rabbeinu, which is why we can now answer up a Gemara Sanhedrin. We'll end with this. Sanhedrin Lamentas says that a min, you know, an apostate, asked HaKadosh Baruch, asked one of the Rishonim, I think it was the Tanoim, I believe it was Rabbi Yeshua, how could Hashem bury Moshe Rabbeinu? Hashem is known as a Kohen, and he brings a pasuk that Hashem is a Kohen, and Hashem can't be Metame himself for someone who's dead. So how could that happen? Now the easy answer is Tzadikim are not Metame, Tzadikim are, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu never died. The easy answer, he didn't want to give that to him. So give him an easy answer. He said, let's think. If Moshe Rabbeinu died, and he's in a plane that is impossible for a normal human being to deal with, and not even a malach can see where Moshe Rabbeinu is. Well, you have the Ish's Kvurasa that nobody can see, even the Ish, Michal, and Gabriel, who are known as Ish, nobody knows his Kvurasa. Then he's a Meis Mitzvah. A Kohen could be Metame himself for a Meis Mitzvah. And thus HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who's a Kohen, could be Metame himself for a Meis Mitzvah. That's the idea of how he answered the Kasha. The obvious question is, he's not Metame. He's not that. But even if Hashem is considered a Kohen, and even if you consider Moshe Rabbeinu dead, and even if you consider him to be literally buried, HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a Kohen would be able to bury Moshe Rabbeinu because he's a Meis Mitzvah, and the greatest Meis Mitzvah in the world, that no one else could possibly bury him. That's what the Medrash means when it says, the Malachim called out and said, where is Moshe Rabbeinu? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I buried him. And the Malachim said something like, Baruch Kvod Hashem Yimkomo, that no one else knows where the place of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, that he was beyond any of the areas where they were. So in summary, Aaron is a chassid. We explain what happened at May Meriva and Moshe Rabbeinu's death and burial. We went through his death and his burial, and we'll stop with that. Have a great Shabbat.